Good morning. Thanks everybody for coming in and listening to my talk. My name is Daniel Kaiser. I'm with the University of Minnesota, and what I'm going to talk about today focuses on some of our work to look at developing a correlation database for potassium. Specifically, what we've been looking at is some of our testing methods, comparing the moist soil test versus the dry soil test, just to see where we're at in terms of critical levels and where we're at with our recommendations. To give you a little bit of a background, the current potassium recommendations in Minnesota probably date back to the early 80s. So we're looking at a number of years since things have been looked at. And it's been interesting going through some of this because there's been a few things that have popped out in terms of our recommendations, which may not necessarily be surprising to some of you in some states. But for us, and I'll go through this, there were some things in there that came out, some things that we need to look at, I think, to work on our recommendations to get a better accurate picture in terms of some of the potassium availability within certain areas of the state. So one thing I find interesting about Minnesota is the diversity of parent materials across the state. And this, when we start looking at some of the potassium issues, really has a big impact on availability. Particularly, if we look at the southeast part of the state where we have deep lust soils, which tend to be kind of medium in potassium to low. One thing about these soils, though, that we've found is even with the lower soil tests, that it isn't necessarily as definite that you're going to get a response within these particular soils because they tend to be deeper with depth. When you look at the potassium soil test, it doesn't change as much with depth. So you can go down to about 60 centimeters and still see soil test values in that 80 to 100 milligrams per kilogram with the ammonium acetate test. So it's been kind of interesting looking at that because we tend to see more moderate responses on these sites where we don't always see the large return on investments. Probably our biggest problem area is our outwash soils, and in Minnesota we have somewhere between 200 to 250,000 hectares of irrigated corn on soils that range from very coarse sand in the top 15 centimeters to silt loam textures overlaying sand and gravel. So with a lot of these soils, they tend to be natively low in potassium. They tend to leach potassium as well. So in terms of holding potassium, it gets to be harder to build these soils. And these are the ones that have kind of stuck out, and I'll talk a little bit about that when we start talking about the critical levels in some of the changes we need to probably make with our recommendations moving forward. Then the majority of our corn acreage, when we start looking at it on glacial till soils, which if you look at the state, we look at potassium availability increasing dramatically if we move from east to west. So if you look at the native levels in the soil, we can get some levels between 100 to 200 milligrams per kilogram in the central part of the state to 2 to 300 in the western part of the state. And if you get into the lacustrine soils where we have the old glacial lake bed deposits, you can get well into the 3 to 400 milligram per kilogram range. So in terms of that, in terms of the clay content, so we see a lot of variability and availability in both issues related to potassium that we've been addressing within the last 10 years. So why are we worried about researching this? Well, a lot of it is I'd like to blame Iowa just because of some of the changes down there. But if you look at the state of Minnesota, particularly in that where that arrow is, that actually points to central Iowa and the Des Moines Lobe. And that's one of the last glaciation periods where we have glacial till deposited that goes up into much of central Minnesota. So if you look at a lot of the issues in the paper by Barbara Gletta and Mallorino in 2013 where they were seeing issues related with the dry tests on these poorly drained soils, many of those soils actually extend up into Minnesota. So we have a lot of consultants, too, working along the southern border that we get a lot of questions related to that, particularly when Iowa starts changing recommendations and questioning where we're going with Minnesota. And one of the challenges, as I've been working on this K-response database, is that we haven't seen a clear when we start looking at the relationship, like what's in this paper from 2013, when we start looking at calibrating that soil test. So it hasn't been a clear, definitive answer in the last 6-7 years when I've been doing this in terms of what we need to be doing in Minnesota just because of the range in soil properties across the state and the range in potassium availability. So what I'm going to talk about is the development of the database. I'm not going to get into methods for individual sites because one of the things I've been trying to do is to scavenge as much data I can off of individual sites that we have potassium response trials. What I am going to talk about is, you know, how we've been running some of these tests here with the methods because in our state we don't have any labs that are routinely running any of these moist analysis. And the other issue that the labs that are running this, they're running the Malik 3 which what we found is there's really no difference between that and the ammonium acetate, but just for simplicity's sake, we've been running most of these in the lab so we can run ammonium acetates on them so we can compare it back at least to some of the older data and just to make sure that we're accurate moving forward. So with our lab, what we've been doing, and it's one of the reasons why this test isn't really looked on too favorably, is the amount of time it takes with samples, because you're starting off with looking at doing a moisture analysis to figure out the moisture in the sample. Then what we've been doing is we've been running our samples two ways. In order to get a good mix of soil and get an accurate representation of the potassium, usually with the medium and fine soils, we've been doing a slurry method, which involves weighing out 100 gram oven dry equivalent. We add water in to bring up to 200 milliliters of water to do a mixing. And then we have to agitate the sample. Then we dispense samples three times. Two go into duplicate for analysis, and one of those samples goes into back checking to make sure that we're at that 2 grams, so we're at that 1 to 10 dilution factor with the extraction solution. For sandy soils, the pipetting becomes hard, so we're running a direct sieve, so that just means we're running a 2 gram oven dry equivalent and doing a similar extraction in the end with a duplicate analysis. Using an adjusted 1.2 molar ammonium acetate solution adjusted to pH 7, and then the rest is pretty much routine in terms of soil analysis. And we've gotten this down where we can run a few samples. I mean, today we can probably do around 100 easily, which if you look at it though for a lab, that's not really going to be ideal because of throughput issues and the number of samples you're getting. But in terms of what we're doing, this has worked out well, and we've been able to develop this well within our lab to get these samples run efficiently within the given year. So one of the issues with this, and this is the starting point, and this has been what I'd call a big mess with potassium. If you start looking at, this is just looking at some individual sites where we did yes-no trials in fields. We're looking at each point being a individual comparison within a field where we have an applied versus a non-applied treatment. And what we have on the y-axis is the relative yield of the non-applied, and the x-axis is the air dried or the moist ammonium acetate test. And it hasn't been a clear correlation with many of these studies, and a lot of that has to do with the variability within fields. So when I started looking at this data, we had to start looking at moving forward, how do we get a better picture of this and get a better correlation overall to be able to effectively correlate this test to give recommendations to our farmers within the state of Minnesota. So as I said, what I've been doing is scrapping through a lot of the numbers we have. So everything anymore that we're running potassium, we're typically going to run moist analysis on one set of samples, whether it be the controls, like in number three with some of our long-term trials where we're looking at just running the controls and looking at relative yield of the control versus the maximum yield of the plot that we're in within that given year. Within the yes-no strip trials, one of the things I've started to do is to try to look at averaging, and I think this is one of the things that I'm talking to Antonio, they've done a lot, is looking at averaging some of those values together to try to get a better estimate of the actual yield potential within the check strips within these given fields. So the yes-no trials, the data I'm going to show you actually has been modified where we've looked at averaging those together. Then some of our long-term trials, we've got two in place right now. One of them is a rate by timing study that I've had in place since 2009, and Jeff Vetch, my co-author, has had another set of trials in since about 2011 where we're looking at soil test philosophies, looking at build, maintenance, those type of strategies. So within these, we've actually starting to see with these long-term trials some separation in our soil test values, particularly between our higher and low ranges, and that's really what we've needed moving forward with that, and it's one of the reasons why that previous slide we haven't been able to get a good estimate of the critical level because we've had a very few lower points. So one thing I did is I started looking at the data, and what I'm going to show you here is a combined analysis with corn and soybean. I tried to separate them, but if you look at the two of them, it's still kind of a big mass together. And I think in terms of the overall interpretation, looking at it, we've historically had a similar interpretation for the two. The problem being, though, with the soybean is we haven't necessarily seen a very strong yield response, even at some of the lower soil test levels. So what this shows, the two graphs on the top are our sandy soils. And this is one of the biggest changes I think that we've seen is with these sandy soils, seeing a lower critical level on those. And it's one of the things we haven't had in place. And it's one of the things when we look at our very sandy surface textures, a lot of these growers are probably over-applying potassium in these circumstances. And one of the things that concerns me about some of these soils too is the ability to hold potassium is very low. So it isn't as if we can retain what we've applied in excess of what's needed. It builds somewhat, but it doesn't really build beyond a certain point. So the top ones would be our sandy soils. The bottom ones are, the two graphs are medium and fine textured soils. The graphs on the left would be the field moist samples, and the graphs on the right would be the air dried samples. The biggest thing is going to be that lower right graph, and that's the air dried for a medium and fine. And if you look at a lot of the issues that Iowa had, it was mainly in some of those soils that were poorly drained, which would fit within this category. The colors on this graph represent the maroon or corn sites, and the gold sites are soybean sites. And you can see, actually, we see a stronger response within our corn sites, particularly at some of the lower soil test values. The bigger issue, though, is on that bottom right graph is the spread, where we look at the plateau value being around 200 milligrams per kilogram, and where I define the critical level at 95% of relative yield is about 100. So that's a pretty wide range in soil test values. Plus, you can see the R squared is about 0.14, so the overall predictiveness of this isn't very good. So if you look at one of the conclusions from the work in Iowa is the fact that they were seeing a much better correlation with the moist test, which is actually one of the things we're actually seeing some improvement, particularly in these poorly drained soils. Now, this is a first cut. These are quadratic plateau models. We haven't run Kate Nelson. I've looked at a few other models. The quadratic plateau fit better than the linear and some of the other models. So there's a little bit of work in progress with this. So this may not be the be-all, end-all, but overall, though, just looking at it in terms of the separation, at least a starting point here, it's giving us at least some data in terms of where we need to be going. So summarizing those, if you look at the critical levels at 95% maximum yield versus the plateau values, the sands, really not a lot of difference. And that's one of the things I didn't expect with these coarse textured soils with very sandy surface textures to see much of a difference, because we don't have a lot of clay to affect the potassium fixation or release within those particular soils. However, seeing a slight difference, but overall our critical levels, which are right now I define around 160 milligrams per kilogram according to our current recommendations, seeing a pretty significant drop. And it's been interesting with a lot of these soils that we've been able to maintain yield with about 50 kilograms per hectare annual K2L applications in corn and soybean rotations versus our current recommendations, which would be about three times higher than that with what we currently have. So there's a work in progress there. One thing with the outwash, though, is there are some soils there that are silt loams, and I don't have those included in here because we haven't looked at those. So those would have to probably bear a different recommendation because they tend to hold potassium better. And then again, you look at the moist versus the dry and the medium and fine. It's one of the things looking at a lot of our data, other than just not being able to really correlate that dry test. We haven't seen much of an evidence for shifting that critical level to much higher levels as they've done in Iowa. So conclusions on this, if we look at the ability to improve or look at our K response, the moist test does work better. Is it the answer for all soils? No. One of the things about it, if we are building though, if we are using air dry test, a lot of growers ask me what's a good point. And you look at what Iowa's went to, and you look at that previous graph where we've seen that plateau point at 200 ppm or milligrams per kilogram, that seems to be a good target point for building to it. One other piece of evidence for this is this, and we've looked at a number of sites. This is just one instance where we've looked at the difference between the moist and dry test relative to the moist test. And one thing I've been looking at this is where that crosses zero, or at what point at which they are relatively the same. And usually if we look at this linear fit here, it's around 200 milligrams per kilogram. So again, if I'm looking at where I'm more concerned about, it's going to be situations where we're below that point, looking at variability. And when we look at the soil texture, it does affect it just based on our data. And that's one of the biggest changes we're going to have to make to our growers, is looking at that low CEC soils, particularly our irrigated with very sandy surface textures, really looking at to probably adjusting those recommendations down. And right now on the corn and soybean side, we're really not seeing a difference in the interpretation, but moving forward as we get more data, that may change. But looking at our interpretation classes, they've always been the same. Just the recommended amounts of potassium have been different just for the two systems. So with that, I want to thank you for your time, and do we have any time for questions?
Yeah, about a minute or so.
Robert.
Dan, how is the K applied at when?
Okay, the question was how the K was applied and when it was applied. It depended on the studies. Some of them were fall applied, Some of them were spring applied. It just depended if we're a one-year study and if we're a multi-year study. The soil test, when we took them, we were taking the soil tests at points at which we weren't directly following a K application. That's one of the things that was important about what I've seen is some big fluctuations. We've tried to let it sit for a while to let it react with the soil. So to try to give it some time in terms of that K to soil test to stabilize.
Any other questions?
All right, thank you.